And we turn now to an incident between a U.S. Air Force reconnaissance plane and four North Korean fighter jets on Sunday morning. The American plane was intercepted in international airspace over the Sea of Japan and tailed for over 20 minutes. It landed safely, but U.S. reconnaissance flights on that route have now been suspended. Joining us to talk about the incident is Kurt Campbell. He's director of the International Security Program for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He used to be a senior advisor on Asia at the Pentagon, and he joins us from his office here in Washington on the phone. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good morning, or good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon. Can you tell us a little bit about the aircraft that were involved in this incident?
Well, yes. The American aircraft is called an RC-135. It's a reconnaissance aircraft. It's sort of an ungainly-looking 707. Looks like a 707 on steroids with a lot of bulbs and bumps on it, which is essentially used to do surveillance on a variety of different things, particularly missile launches, other kinds of sensitive military maneuvers. Those planes fly traditionally throughout the Asia-Pacific region. They fly near North Korea, near China, and they traditionally had a mission near Russia in the Cold War. They were intercepted by four MiG airplanes from North Korea that flew out into the Sea of Japan and, as you indicated, tailed the plane for about 20 minutes and at times flying perilously close to the American reconnaissance plane, almost a repeat performance of what we witnessed between China and the United States 2 years ago when we saw the American aircraft crash on Hainan Island. Fortunately, no difficulties along those lines, but there are reports that the North Korean aircraft took some provocative steps that could have easily triggered a conflagration in the sea between the United States and North Korea.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And the provocative steps involve the use of radar. Now, tell us the difference between all aircraft use radar to tell where they are and scan to make sure they're not going to collide with anything, but it was a particular kind of radar that alarmed the U.S. aircraft in this instance.
Yes, now, there's a weapons control radar that is found on most fighter aircraft, and what that does is it, quote-unquote, lights up an aircraft, and it is the step that you would take just before engaging that aircraft or that target with either missiles or guns. And so it's considered in the sort of the air community an extraordinarily provocative step. And in the past, just simply by doing that, that has been enough to trigger a response from the airplane that has been lit up, so to speak. And so the fact that the RC-135 is unarmed meant that there was no particular response at that time, but other aircraft could easily have been scrambled and responded.
Well, the aircraft was, as you say, you can call it reconnaissance flight. The North Koreans call it espionage. They're looking to gain evidence and telemetry from North Korean missile tests, evidently. Are these flights, are the North Koreans right to regard them as provocative?
I think the key here is not what the flights were up to, but in what area were they up to it. And the reality is this is clearly an acknowledged international airspace. These flights are not provocative in the sense that they are conducted over decades. In almost all countries in Asia understand them, and I think North Korea has known about them for years and years. The last time that we had a problem along these lines, as you note, is in 1969 when sort of an earlier precursor to this aircraft, what was called an EC-121 aircraft, was shot down in April 1969, and it killed all 31 people aboard. So it's been a long time since we've had these kinds of really dangerous tensions between the United States and the North Korean military. And of course, this, you know, follows on a variety of things, sort of the very provocative nuclear steps that the North Koreans have taken, the test firings of the missile at the very time that the new South Korean president was being inaugurated. So if you add this all up together, this, in my view, is probably the most dangerous situation that we face on the globe today.
The first response that we heard about was that the next flight was going to be accompanied, escorted by U.S. fighter jets. Now we hear today that this reconnaissance route is not going to be used. Is that a prudent response, do you think?
Well, it's interesting. Basically, when this happened with China a couple of years ago, I mean, we made quite clear that we would not stop our flights, that, in fact, they were international airspace. We were We were in no problem conducting them. I think one of the problems that we have right now is the administration, the U.S. government, has taken a decision that under no circumstances is this going to be a crisis, no matter what happens in North Korea. And so they want, if at all possible, to keep attention focused like a laser on Iraq. And so they want to try to create no opportunity for North Korea to spur more tensions with the United States around the region. So they'll probably do everything possible in the short term to avoid bringing anything with North Korea to a head. But of course, as we all know, North Korea has a penchant for getting off the back burner and putting themselves on full boil. And I think that's what they're doing right now.
Let's take a quick call from Greg, who's on the line with us from Roscoe, Illinois.
Yes. How you doing? My question was, I was in the Marine Corps and I went to Vietnam twice. And my question is, why would North Korea lock on that aircraft? What was the purpose of doing that? They didn't shoot it out of the sky, but what was the purpose of them locking on that aircraft and then not shooting it down? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Appreciate the call, Greg.
It's a great question, and one that I can assure you that intelligence analysts and State Department and Defense Department officials are quarreling about and struggling with in Washington today. There is one group that believes that what North Korea is trying to do is signal that they want direct discussions and negotiations with the United States, and they're prepared to trigger a crisis in order to get the United States to sit down face-to-face with them. Now, there is another group that believes that what North Korea is trying to achieve through its surreptitious nuclear efforts and other provocative steps is to maintain a nuclear and military capability that is deeply unsettling and worrying both to the United States and other countries in the region. Now, it's possible that both explanations are true, but it is absolutely clear over the last 2 months we've seen a range of provocative steps that is almost unprecedented in terms of U.S.-North Korean standoffs. We've seen one or two of these things like this in the past, but never such a succession of steps. My worry here is...
Very quickly, Kurt.
Go ahead, Neil.
Very quickly. We're
okay.
Got 5 seconds.
My worry here is that by saying that we will not talk to the North Koreans, we're just creating the space for the North Koreans to do things that are even more provocative moving forward.
Kurt Campbell, thanks. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.